Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me today from across Los Angeles is Bill Rubel. Bill is the writer and executive producer of the mega pandemic hit series, Ted Lasso, which airs on Apple TV+. First, Bill, thank you for the series and thanks for being here. I got to say, you've made a big difference in my pandemic life.
Oh, thanks, Adam. This is such a thrill. As you know, I go way back with your family. Your brother's my friend, you know, your parents, your dad, I'm so sorry, passed away. It's just a wonderful, was so generous to me when I wanted to get into TV. So I'm happy to be talking to you.
Well, Bill, thank you so much. It was very sweet and I really appreciate that a lot. Now let's talk about the show. Ted Lasso was originally a character in commercials promoting soccer on American TV. And by the time the series came around, though, the character had changed a lot. He went from a very arrogant guy to a much more naive and humble one. What led to the evolution?
That's a great question. You know, originally, basically NBC secured the rights to the Premier League and they were looking to promote it. And Jason Sudeikis, who was either currently on Saturday Night Live or had just been on Saturday Night Live, was approached to do something. And Jason had lived in Amsterdam for a while. And so he had two friends, Brendan Hunt and Joe Kelly. They did improv in Amsterdam. And Brendan in particular had become a giant soccer fan living in Europe because, you know, the sport of soccer, or as it's called, their football, is such, you know, it's so ubiquitous. And so Brendan had spoken to Jason about soccer and football and was so passionate about it. Jason wasn't a giant soccer fan, but he was like, I'll do these promos. And he brought Brendan and Joe Kelly, who was also his friend and improv actor, in, and they came up with this character and they shot the promos. And I completely agree with you. The character in the promos, broad, kind of the dumb American, you know, a little bit silly. But that was just the purpose. The purpose of those promos was really just to like pique an audience's interest. And like you said, you can see them on YouTube and they've got many millions of views. But I think that they never expected the character to go into anything beyond those promos. So there was no real question about his giving him depth or adding more. And then what's also, I think, interesting is when they decided they wanted to turn it into a series, a producer named Bill Lawrence came aboard and they really began to flesh it out. And they pitched it, but people didn't want it because often they were reacting to the promos. Like, I don't know, the promos seem goofy, the promos seem broad. I know for a fact certain well-known streamers passed on it for that exact reason. But then I will say, when I read the script, I went to my meeting with Jason and I was like, this script is actually kind of melancholy, you know, that was not the tone of the promos. And then little by little, as we worked on the show, because it was often my job to kind of drill down with Jason on what he wanted the show to be, I was like, oh, this is going to be entirely different from the promos. There's a handful of jokes from the promos we're going to steal, but this is its own brand new thing. And that was for sure a function of Jason's vision. And I also just think I use this term loosely, but Jason's genius at recognizing that he wanted the show to be about something beyond laughter. He wanted it to be have meaning underneath it. In fact, my meeting with him, one of the first questions he asked me was, have you ever had a mentor in your life? And I want you to tell me a little bit about him or her. And that speaks to what Jason's vision was for the show, which is he didn't want it to be a goofy coach. He wanted it to be about a human being who could have an impact on the lives of a bunch of other human beings. So that's sort of, I'm sorry if that's a little long-winded, but that's kind of my version of how we got from a kind of a broad promo to a more thoughtful character.
No need to apologize for that answer. I think it's really illuminating, and I think that really shows through in the show, you know, how much it is really about somebody who cares about other people. And I'm sure there's as many theories as to why Ted Lasso is a success as there are fans. My own theory is that aside from being very funny, people are responding to the underlying decency it shows and that concern for other people, that people want to see a world where people embrace their best selves and encourage others to do so. I wonder how much I'm projecting more to it than that, but it sounds as if that was very much the direction you wanted to go with.
Yeah, well, and again, that was for me one of the great joys of working on the show, was understanding early on that Jason and Bill were interested in empathy, you know, and they were interested in forgiveness, and they were interested in generosity of spirit. There were moments, and I don't want to spoil anything for anyone who's watched the show, where in the first season, where I was anticipating, oh, this is going to be a huge moment of conflict and for these particular characters. And Jason would be like, no, I would forgive that person in that moment. And that was really, I found that to be moving and very human, because I think a lot of times dramatically people are like, let's turn up the anger on this, or let's turn up the conflict on this, or let's turn up the comedy and make it broader. Let's make these people fight, because it seems like, oh, conflict is what engages an audience. And it was really a surprise to me to discover that, oh, an audience actually will embrace, you need conflict, but an audience will also embrace empathy. You know, an audience will embrace gratitude. An audience will embrace generosity of spirit. An audience will embrace characters loving each other. I know that sounds a little like hippy dippy, but I think it also was instructive to what you're saying, which is, no, people don't necessarily want to only watch people not getting along. You can also make something entertaining when people do get along.
And I think that adds a lot to it. I mean, there's definitely times where you can see there's an issue coming up and Ted Lasso is biting his tongue. And the audience, I think, relates to the fact that here's somebody who, when given the opportunity to lash back, chooses not to, and chooses to try and find some sort of understanding and diffuse the conflict rather than amp it up. And what's interesting there is it ties into the fact that the show, despite the fact that it is about sports, is very much not about winning or losing matches, but about choosing the right thing to do in a given situation. What do you think the show does right to make these decisions so interesting to people? I ask because, you know, compliance and ethics officers do a lot of training in this area. They try and show people how to make the right decision. There's often the complaint that it's boring, it's not interesting, but you know, you did a show filled with those kinds of choices, whether it's in the character's personal life or whether it's, say, you know, benching a star player because he's destroying the team while he's scoring well. What do you think is the sort of secret sauce to make people so interested in this and start rooting for the right course?
Well, I think there's a variety of ways to answer that, but I'm going to pick a couple. One I'm going to say is, Jason, again, as the creator and visionary of the show, and I always also want to credit Brendan Hunt and Joe Kelly, who created the character with him, and also Bill Lawrence. Bill Lawrence created, Scrubs. He's a longtime TV producer and was able to, Jason, execute this vision. But Jason's background was in improvisation, you know, and improvisation is not about, as far as I understand it, I'm not an authority on it, is not about an individual, it's about a group. And improvisation is about, you're as dependent on what the other person is doing and the other people in the group are doing as what you're doing. And so I think that Jason was interested in a world where some of those facets of an organism or an organization that works well by empowering everyone around it versus empowering something at the center was always part of his philosophy, because I think that he loves improvisation, and I think he finds that process of creating something out of nothing to be magical, but it can't be the vision of only one person. It's the vision of six people or eight people or 10 people or 12 people. You know, and we definitely talked about issues of leadership, and there's, you know, I'm sure people know of the work of Brené Brown and about vulnerability and about how great leadership is more about openness than being shut off. And so, again, I think that idea early on was part of the world that we were creating. I recently read a wonderful leadership book by a man named Matthew Barzun, Barzun. He had been President Obama's ambassador to the UK. His book is called The Power of Giving Away Power. And it's very much about how, again, it sort of debunks the idea that everything has to flow from the top. So Jason, I think, was interested in how organizations can flower without being fully centralized, and how an entire company team can grow because the individuals are growing, because they're being encouraged and operating not out of a feeling of fear, but a feeling of curiosity. You know, be curious, not judgmental, is one of the popular lines from the first season. And I do believe that's a theme that he's interested in. And again, and then we, as a writing staff and the actors on the staff, I think we're all able to, oh, that's what he wants to do. And hopefully we then, at that able, we're able to nurture that idea and give it life in all the work we did.
Well, you certainly did give it just tons of great in life. Now, let's talk about, in some ways, the sort of the anti-Ted, which is Roy Kent, who's one of my favorite characters. I mean, he started out and is still probably the crankiest, angriest man in the world. but it emerges over the course of the series that it's not just because he's obsessed with winning. I mean, he does have that drive to command everything. It's because he has also an incredibly strong and seemingly instantaneous sense of what's right and wrong, and no patience for anyone that he sees doing something wrong. You know, and to me, that's a great contrast to Ted, who tends to be patient and more nurturing. Ted wants to change the world with love. Roy is ready to fight everyone, including a small child who does something wrong. am I seeing more than is there, or was it a conscious choice to show the different ways we can all deal with the wrongs we see around us?
Yeah, I believe that it was a conscious choice. Obviously, there's Roy, I think, is an example of, at least one of my opinions, of there's different styles of leadership, you know, and there's Ted's more loquacious, empathetic, I see something in you leadership, and I'm going to nurture it, and I'm going to actively nurture it. And then I think there's Roy leadership, which is more, it's less verbal, you know. And I also think that the idea behind Roy is this is a man who's been playing professional soccer for 20 years, and he's probably done nothing in his life since he was a child but be nurtured to play football. And so he's a little bit like your battle-scarred veteran who's learned all the lessons. He may not impart them by pulling you aside. It's more observe me, and this is how I do it. So I think that he is impatient. I don't think he's interested in taking young players under his wing. I just think at the same time that he's the captain of the team because he has internalized every lesson that he's learned over the years and is a model for how to do something. So I do, and look, I think maybe as a coach, he would become more verbal, but I think as a player, he also doesn't have time, because he's still a player at a high level, to chit chat with everybody. But I think it's a little bit like, just watch how I do it. And do it like me is sort of what's underneath him. And so that was always a conscious choice to make him brusque, gruff, a man of less words, but a man with a very defined moral center. And yet I do believe there's moments, particularly in season two as it evolves, where you'll see Roy is like, okay, I'm no longer a player. I may have to embrace a new way of working that is influenced by Ted. I think you'll see some growth in that character, both professionally and personally, in season two.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was very fun watching that as he starts to find what his new life is going to be, know that he's no longer a player. Now, one of the other things I've enjoyed in the show is getting to know the characters over time and watch them evolve. It reveals that there are a lot more to the characters and also to people as a whole than they first seem. Roy's anger, as we just discussed, comes from a good place. Keely isn't just a fun, tardy model. She's a thoughtful, nurturing, good person with quite the head on her shoulders. Jamie Tart is selfish because of how he was raised. Is there a plea here to take time to know people before you judge them? And how do we encourage that more in the workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and again, that was partially Jason's ability to see the world and the world around him with some degree of I don't want to say empathy, I keep using that word, but just like give people room to grow. And I think it's also that's something he, because he's benefited from it. I remember like Jason's dream was to be a performer, and I'm not telling anything that he hasn't said, it wouldn't talk about. And he was a, did well, and he was an improv performer. But then his first job at Saturday Night Live, he got hired as a writer, not as a performer, because, and he told this story because Tina Fey said to him, well, if you can improvise, you can write, so you're going to start as a writer, which probably was discouraging to him. And yet he was like, okay. And by the way, it's still a great job, I would imagine, writing on Saturday Night Live. And then he also said that when Tina Fey would run that writer's room, somebody like him who was a little nervous at first, she would be like, what did you say? She was very aware of clocking the participation of every single person in that writer's room. And she was very good at encouraging the people who weren't as loud but had points of view, and she would note it. So for me, I always took that away, that Jason learned a lot from Tina Fey, who was a person who had the insight and wisdom to look around the room of however many people are on a writer's staff and be like, well, maybe the loudest isn't the best. And I was really taken with that. And I've heard Jason talk about the other writers he's worked with on Saturday Night Live by name and be like, oh, and this person can contribute that and this person can contribute that. And I was very moved by that, because having been on a number of writing staffs where you're typically competing with the person to your left and your right to get your jokes in, it seemed that there were people at Saturday Night Live Jason learned from that he has now, you know, internalized that lesson of like, you never know where the good idea is going to come from. It could be there from the person who's been there for an hour. It could be there from someone who's been there for 10 years. And to me, that should apply to any business, whether it's a TV show or any world. Just don't underestimate the other person in the room and be prepared to be, to draw on them in a way that you, that on, you know, you don't know. It might be somebody who's shy. It might be somebody who's awkward. It could be somebody who stammers. It could be somebody who has been a performer and never been a writer, has been an editor and never been a writer. They've been hired. Like, Jason's very good at not, and again, I think this is just a vision of leadership and organization that I really like, which is just don't have preconceptions, you know? And I think that that's Jason's view of how to coach that team, which is on the surface, Jamie Tart is one thing, but maybe underneath it is another thing. On the surface, Keely is one thing, but maybe she's another thing. And I think that that's hopefully that's a feeling that kind of flows throughout the show.
Oh, it absolutely does. And the struggle that you're talking about and the effort there to not prejudge what kind of person you want and how people should behave, I think is something that organizations of all kinds wrestle with. You know, there's a vision of what a person is at X company, but the broader you can set that vision and the broader that you can encourage people to bring the various aspects of themselves and feel comfortable, the likelier they are to speak up in a meeting when, you know, they're writers sitting around the table, but also the more likely they are to speak up when they see something wrong and they've got to report to someone that there's something here that's not good for us that could be highly problematic. Well, Bill, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. And thank you so much for both seasons of the show. I think I speak for many who've watched it who can't wait for season 7, because we want it to at least go that long. And by which point, hopefully, Richmond will be the champions. Anyway, so thank you so much. Enjoy this time. And I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turtletaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.